Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's not Pomp or Joe. Donnie is with you until 11. Dom DiTommaso, or till 11. It is 11. Donnie Chedrick with you until 2. Dom DiTommaso with me behind the glass. Pony and Muller, they will be live from Oakmont Bakery again, which is open to the public. We had a few people texting us yesterday asking if it was open to the public, because I guess one of the news stations in town made it seem like it wasn't. I don't know, but it is open to the public, so you can stop by there if you are heading out to the U.S. Open. Say hello to those guys. They will be on site from 2 until 6. Fan Hotline, that is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. On that Fan Hotline, we find our great friend Ray Fittipaldo, who is brought to you by the Western Pennsylvania injury attorneys Larry Kelly and Joe George from LGKG, your home team. Ray, let's talk a little bit about our own home team here. But first, you may have heard a little bit of our late hour discussion there, Ray. And to put you on the spot, the Dan Patrick Show did a topic yesterday, and it was, what is the best movie with no star actors at the time of its release? Do any pop into your head right off the bat?
Oh, man. I heard the tail end of your segment. You guys were talking about The Outsiders?
Yeah, we've had a few people text about The Outsiders.
So this was probably a year after, or maybe right around the same time, maybe a year or two after, but Red Dawn was similar, right? Like Red Dawn had
Charlie Sheen
and Patrick Swayze. Yeah, so I don't know if those guys were stars at that point, but they eventually became stars.
Yeah, that's a good one. I watched that aplenty with the old man as a kid. So I like the OG. They tried to remake Red Dawn, and they had our buddy Josh Peck in there, Dom. It certainly did not hit the same as the Red Dawn of the 80s, I'm sorry to say. But that's usually the case of most remakes. Ray, your first impressions of Aaron Rodgers, Steelers quarterback?
He looks good throwing on air. I mean, Donnie, as you know, he didn't practice, which is a little bit of an interesting development, I guess. You know, anything involving 11-on-11 or even 7-on-7, he didn't take part in. So I think we're going to find out for sure in training camp. I think the expectation is he'll have the offense down pat then. That's why Mike didn't want him back there in minicamp. But I think everyone this week wanted to see that, right? They wanted to see him run the offense. But I guess we got to wait until July 24th and look true for that to happen.
What type of working relationship do you anticipate between Rodgers and Arthur Smith?
Yeah, it seems like they're on the same page. You know, Arthur and Aaron both made mention that they've gotten to know each other off the field for the last couple of years. And there's a lot of similarities there in terms of their football backgrounds. Like Arthur Smith worked in Tennessee for a year with Matt LaFleur, and then Matt LaFleur, of course, worked with Aaron for about 5 years before Aaron Rodgers went to the Jets. So there's a lot of similarities in some of the verbiage and, you know, the offensive concepts that they're running. So I don't think the football aspect of it will be very difficult. And it seems like Aaron and Art are two similar personalities. Just being around Aaron for this week, he's kind of got a dry sense of humor, and Arthur Smith is like the driest sense of humor of all time. I mean, that guy is actually really funny if you get to know him a little bit. So, you know, from that aspect, they might vibe a little bit as well.
Did anybody ask Rodgers about the handshake deal idea? Because so many people were going along with the notion of, hey, they've had a handshake deal in place for a long time, and they're just waiting for Rodgers to sign his name. Did you kind of get an indication that it was set in stone for quite some time?
You know, I don't know about a handshake deal, but I think all along, and, you know, Aaron alluded to this, that Mike Tomlin was really respectful of Aaron's process as he was dealing with some of the personal issues. We know one of those issues is Aaron got married in the last couple of months, so I think that was part of it. But I think there's another side of that as well, where, you know, some family members have, or some people close to him, I should say, have been dealing with some health issues. So what Aaron said was Mike was really, you know, great throughout that process, didn't put a lot of pressure on Aaron. I think both sides probably understood that this was going to happen sooner rather than later. But, you know, as far as a handshake deal or, you know, like a silent contract being in place, I don't think that ever really got ramped up until June 1st. June 1st is when Aaron called the Steelers, let them know he was going to come in. And then, you know, the last 2 weeks he signed the contract and, of course, was out there taking part in minicamp this past week.
How do you feel, at least on paper, about 3 months before they will play games for real? How do you feel the offense right now stacks up to what we saw in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, listen, offensive line, I'm a little bit optimistic about it, just because all those guys are going to have another year under their belt. But there's a big question mark at left tackle that has to be resolved. But I'm cautiously optimistic about that group. The running back group, I think, can be really good. They got a zone, an outside zone back in Caleb Johnson. Jaylen Warren, I think we all agree, could have started last year. So I like that. And then the two, you know, receiver and quarterback, you finally got your quarterback in place. You think he's got something left in the tank. I think we could all agree that receiver is probably the number one issue they have to deal with between now and training camp. I think they need at least another body in there to provide some competition. I'm not convinced it has to be like a legit number two receiver where you have to like trade away some draft assets to get a legit guy. But I think you do need competition for guys like Calvin Austin and Roman Wilson. You don't want to just hand it to them. You want to have somebody in there who can compete with them and, you know, fill out that receiver rotation. So it's a little bit more talented and a little bit deeper as well.
Do you have confidence in them to do that? We heard the report from Jonathan Jones from CBS Sports the other day that they're sort of lowballing a lot of teams trying to get another target. Do you have confidence they will add one, unlike last year?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Steelers always do. I mean, this is the time of year where you could actually get guys on the cheap. You know, there's people in Dallas who probably think that they robbed the Steelers. So, you know, we'll see how all that works out. I thought that report was a little bit overblown. You're always trying to get the best deal possible for your football team. So, you know, there's some free agents out there too, Donnie. If you don't want to trade away any draft assets, Gabe Davis is still out there. Keenan Allen's still out there. Some other guys like that. I think Amari Cooper's still out there. So, you know, there's some names out there where you wouldn't even have to give up a draft pick if you didn't want it to. So those are options as well.
Now, do you have any idea of how the meeting with Gabe Davis went? Because he came and went without a deal.
So he's been on a tour, and it seems like these teams are just doing their due diligence, and they're looking at the injury, trying to decide if if he can come in healthy and compete for a spot on the roster. So there was something similar that happened a few years back with Larry Ogunjobi. Ogunjobi was cut at that point, and the Steelers kind of waited on him, and they signed him right before a training camp. So I don't know the extent of Gabe Davis's injury, but the fact that he's still out there and the fact that he's still visiting a lot of other teams probably tells me that that injury isn't quite healed just yet, but that doesn't mean it won't be healed by September. So I think teams in Gabe Davis's instance are probably waiting around a little bit to get some answers on that.
And I do still think, Ray, that Alan Lazard is the sort of elephant in the receiver room, even though he's not a Steeler. They would have to trade for him with the Jets. But we do know that Rodgers loves him some Alan Lazard. Do you think that could be a real possibility?
Yeah, why not? You know, give somebody that Aaron Rodgers is familiar with. And, let's face it, they do not have a lot of guys with, deep resumes in that receiving core other than DK Metcalf. Now, I will say this, Calvin Austin, I thought, had a really good spring. I think he's gonna build off of what he did last year. And what he did last year was actually pretty good. 540-some yards receiving, 4 touchdowns. He's going to be a big part of this rotation. The question for me, Donnie, is do you want him being your number 2, or would you rather him be like your number 3? So, if he's your number 3 and he's playing in the slot a lot, that just brings you back to the question. Is Roman Wilson going to be good enough now to be a starter? And who else is left? You got Robert Woods, but Robert Woods is long in the tooth. He's coming off a disappointing season. I just think they need more options. And Alan Lazard would be a good option, I think, in that regard. Give you a guy with experience. If a guy like Roman Wilson steps up at some point in the season, he could bump Lazard down to like a number 4 receiver. So I wouldn't have any issues at all if they went out and traded, say, a 5th or a 6th round pick for him.
Zach Azzani said yesterday about Calvin Austin being firmly the team's number 2 receiver. Is that just a, hey, we're not even to training camp yet, I'm able to label him as such?
Yeah. Well, who else? Yeah. I mean, there's nobody else there. So, Zach and, Arthur does this all the time. They coach the players who are there. And, what Zach said doesn't change the fact that they could probably get deeper and have some more competition there, later in the summer. So, but again, Donnie, I mean, if you ask any reporter who was out there for the last 3 weeks, Calvin Austin looked really good. And I think, if they're looking for like a Randall Cobb type of a player for Aaron Rodgers, a guy who can, run your shorter routes or intermediate routes and maybe get some yards after the catch, maybe Calvin Austin can be that type of a guy.
You mentioned his name earlier, and it seems like everybody who we have had on any show over the course of either rookie camp or mandatory mini camp love Caleb Johnson. So it seems like this kid is really setting some sort of first impression.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's got the resume at Iowa. I think the most important thing, and I touched on it earlier, was he's a perfect fit for Arthur Smith's offense. And I don't think people realize how that worked last year with Najee. Like, Najee always showed up. He ran hard. But if you're not a good fit schematically, then it doesn't really matter. And I think that goes all the way back, quite honestly, to the decision not to pick up his fifth-year option. So we're still pretty new into this Omar Khan, Arthur Smith era in terms of these guys – coming on the last 2 or 3 years, and they're trying to get their players in place, the personnel in place that fit the offense. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think Jalen Warren is going to be RB1 to start the season. I think he deserves that, but I expect a big role in the rotation for Caleb Johnson as well.
Talking to Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette here on 93.7 The Fan. Ray, it was either Carl Dunbar or Terrell Austin who have labeled Derek Harmon as a starter already. Now, I'm a fan of that, and I think that should be the case. He's a first-round pick this year, and I think, listen, if he's your best player, you have him start right away because I don't really always care for the, hey, let's really ease these guys in. So should we expect Harmon out there week one, day one starter?
Yes, to answer your question, but it was also out of character for Carl Dunbar to come out and say that. I think the next day we asked Mike Tomlin about it, and he kind of hemmed and hawed like he always does. But, you know, Mike is always a guy who wants rookies to earn that. I think that's the case, for 99% of the guys. I just think we're in a situation, Donnie, with Harmon, there's absolutely no one else who could even challenge him. I mean, who's going to challenge him for a starting job? Loudermilk, who was brought back as almost an afterthought. Daniel Equale, who's almost 30 and really started for the first time in the NFL last year with the Patriots. I mean, they're just so thin at that position that they pretty much have to start Harmon. And, one thing we're not talking about yet, but we'll talk about it in training camp, they better not get any injuries up front. I know they added two draft picks, but just some of the names behind those guys, the two guys I just mentioned, DeMarvin Leal hasn't put it together yet. He's coming off an injury. I still think their depth could be compromised if a guy like Cam Hayward, Keanu Benton, or Derek Harmon goes down for any period of time this season.
I feel like Leal, he's just like an afterthought at this point. Late in the season last year, I forgot the dude was even on the team. I'm wondering with him if there's real risk that he doesn't even make the 53-man roster.
Yeah, well, listen, that injury was pretty bad last year. He was on the shelf for, I think, the final 3 months of the season. When he was out there this spring, he seemed like he was okay. He put some weight back on. But they just have question marks all over the place. You know, like Loudermilk never really put it together where you thought he was ever going to threaten for a starting job. They got rid of Montrevious Adams this year. That guy has played a lot of snaps in the last 3 years, including last year. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. And don't be surprised if Y.A. Black has a big role in that rotation as well. It just seems like they're looking for a lot of new blood. And I think if Black shows anything in training camp in the preseason games, that he could find a lot of playing time as well.
How has Cole Holcomb looked? I mean, that was a gruesome knee injury he had a couple of seasons ago. Yeah. I wondered if his NFL career was over. The Steelers showed confidence in him. They let Elandon Roberts walk. They have Holcomb back. And, you know, he may not be A1 or A2 with Queen and Wilson in the fold. But, I mean, you can at least notice one thing with football in shorts, and that is, can the guy still move?
Yeah, and he can, and that's been really impressive. You talk to his teammates, they're just so impressed by how hard he has worked. I mean, it's been an 18-month process, and by the time the season gets here, it's going to be close to a 20-month process, for him to get back from that injury. So he's put in all the work. We'll see how that plays out. But an interesting sidebar to that conversation is what Terrell Austin said about the off-the-ball linebacker group. As a whole, he thinks it's the best off-the-ball linebacker group that he's had since he took over in 2019. And Donnie, I mean, I don't have to go over some of the names that have been here over the last couple of years, but I think Austin is right. You know, you got Queen, and right now Peyton Wilson as starters. Holcomb, if he can come back and be, 90% of the guy he used to be, he'll be a really good backup. And then you got Malik Harrison, who I don't think a lot of people know about, but he played a lot of snaps as a run defender for the Ravens too. So they got options. They got that big run stopper in Harrison. I think between Holcomb, Queen, and Wilson, you have three guys there who could be three down defenders if you need them to be. So it's their deepest group. I agree with him in the last 6-7 years.
Ray Fittipaldo, check him out. Post-Gazette covers the Steelers. Ray, thank you.
Thanks, Donnie. Talk to you later.
There we go. The great Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette. I didn't even have to indulge him in free association today. I always wonder if guests are fans of that, when they hop on with Joe. I mean, Ray is a regular, and he's as professional as they come, so I imagine he has no issue with that. But it is time, about a minute or so early, for another Jeff Hathorn check-in. Hit it, Dom.
This Oakmont update is brought to you by Armstrong Business Solutions, Brookline.com, and Aircraft Management Group.
Jeff Hathorn with us live from Oakmont. The U.S. Open underway. Still a handful of guys to get underway this afternoon. But Jeff, how much has changed in the last hour as we look at the leaderboard? Sam Burns continues to make a push.
Some might say that is excellent.
Mr.
He
Burns.
He is minus two. Yes. Do you think he's ever heard that before, even though his name is Sam? He is two shots off the lead. J.J. Spahn, if he were sitting in a room, like having a few beers before his round and just watching, which would be epic, and I'm sure he's not, he's just watching guys come at him and then fall back. Come at him and fall back. The latest is Victor Hovland. He headed to three under, a double on two, drops him back to minus one. Burns is sitting at two, but you kind of wonder, is he due for a fall, or is he going to be able to keep that going? We are now down to only eight players who are under par, and several of them have yet to tee off today. So, I mean, that's been the thing. The big thing right now, Donnie, is the cut line. And right now, on the wrong side of the cut line, is Scottie Scheffler.
What do you think the projected cut, or at least what is the projected cut at?
So for people that watch golf, you might know that it's normally if you're within 10 shots, that's where the cut line is drawn, but it's different for the U.S. Open. It's the top 60 players and those that are tied. So right now, Scottie Scheffler is 70th.
Oh, man.
And he's got some work to do. Now, that could fall back. I mean, some of these guys, especially the ones that haven't teed off, you could project that those players are going to fall back. And five and six are probably going to make it. But if you don't assume that, I mean, Scheffler, who has just been so inconsistent. I mean, listen, he made six bogeys yesterday. At the Memorial Tournament, which he won, he made four bogeys in four rounds total, but had six yesterday. He has three more today. He's just not hitting fairways. It's been a struggle for him, and he's shown visible frustration. He slammed his driver on one of the holes where he went left into the church pews, and I'm not next to him, so but you can even just sense it through the video on television that his frustration level is high. And I think he could still be around for the weekend, but you start to question whether even with his great abilities, if he's going to be able to make a run.
So a guy that usually seems unflappable is quite flapped in the first day and a half.
Yes. Yes. He has turned into Starkey. Well, not quite like that, but he has become frustrated by the conditions, as anyone who has played Oakmont probably has been, because it is difficult golf course. One of the commentators in the media room had a great line. The Phones family designed Oakmont, and he's like, and he just says out loud, "Thank God they only designed one course."
Huh. I mean, it really does eat these guys up like you don't see anywhere else. I mean, some of the huge names you just see with plus four, plus five, or worse. It's amazing.
And Brooks Koepka got it to three under on the back nine, his opening nine. He's now plus one. It'll just grab you. And if you're not hitting it into fairways, which Scheffler is not, you are not going to score. I don't care how great of a player you are.
Who is somebody who hasn't teed off yet that you are worried could really take a stumble out of things? Like Bryson at plus three, who doesn't tee off until the afternoon. Rory, Lucas Glover, which was one of Pomp's dozen picks for this one. Wyndham Clark, you know, like a name like that who has yet to tee off but is already in bad standing after the first round.
Well, of those that are in bad standing, I mean, there are a number. Tommy Fleetwood is plus four. Hideki Matsuyama, Rory plus Phil. I mean, Phil's plus four. Speaking of frustrated at this golf course, I think Phil would fall into that category. Patrick Cantlay is plus six and yet to start his round. By the way, the defending Oakmont U.S. Open champion, Dustin Johnson, is now plus seven for the tournament. We have seen guys mostly fall back. And then you get, you know, we mentioned Justin Thomas during the last update, but he's plus 10. And he came in feeling really good about his chances mm-hmm. out here. He said, I'm patient with my game. I'm not going to get frustrated. He got frustrated. And a lot of guys are getting frustrated. Let's see where these morning guys finish. And then if we assume the conditions are going to be tougher, at least on the greens, because it'll be even drier, man, this is going to be a wild afternoon.
So if you were playing in this tournament, Jeff, as one of the guys on tour, so it's not like you get thrown in right now, your current self, or you'd be happy with anything that you'd golf. After right. the first two rounds, where would you feel your score has to be to think, okay, I'm not right up at the among the leaders, but I'm still in this thing.
One or two over. Maybe even a little further back, but one or two over. If I'm even, I'm feeling great because I'm thinking Spawn's coming back. I'm thinking this dude from South Africa who's never really done much, and Thriston Lawrence, mm-hmm. who is three under and yet to tee off, is going to fall back. So even if Burns finishes at two, I'm sitting at even 1-2 over. I am right in striking distance. And the beauty is I get to rest the rest of this day, and we'll have a later tee time on Saturday. And that's why I'm feeling good in the morning if I'm sitting at anywhere 2 over or better.
The man who was Mr. Irrelevant, Jeff, in our PM Team U.S. Open draft was selected by me, Ben Griffin.
Oh, nice. Nice pick.
He's the only guy who is under out of anybody we picked. I mean, I obviously took Scheffler number one. It would be like irresponsible if I didn't, just the way he's playing. But now I'm a little bit worried because Griffin tees off at 114. So a little bit over 90 minutes from now, I could see that all come crashing down.
Donnie, you'd like him because he's not a big dude, but he doesn't get intimidated by anything. He'll stare down anybody, and he doesn't play just to have a top 10 or to he goes to win all the time. And this guy has played on every minor league tour and just kept busting his tail and finally won two PGA events this year. This is his first U.S. Open. He stared down Scotty at the Memorial. Now, Scotty ended up winning, but not because this guy faltered. It's because Scotty was that good. I mean, Ben Griffin's he's a good pick. He's been playing some great golf this year.
Yeah, I mean, that was my only thinking behind it, Jeff. I'm not going to act like I really know much of anything about golf. All I knew was this guy played close with Scheffler as of a couple of weeks ago. I'll pick him as my last choice. And so far, he's been the most respectable through the first round.
So you're like picking, you know, Gonzaga back in the day or yep. Butler back in the day in the NCAA tournament.
Yep. I'm picking these guys based on mascots, I guess. All right, Jeff, we will check in with you at 12:27-ish, right around there.
And who knows what the leaderboard looks like then.
Yeah, I mean, it could take a whole new twist. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Donnie.
This Oakmont update was brought to you by True Green, White Claw, and Jim Lynch Golf Sales at Pine Creek.
Yeah, and taking a look at that leaderboard, J.J. Spawn and Thriston Lawrence, they still have yet to tee off, as Jeff mentioned. They are 4 and 3 under, respectively. Sam Burns, he's been the most impressive player today, tied for third with Siwoo Kim, 2 under. Kim has yet to tee off. Burns, 4 under on the day at Oakmont. And Scotty Scheffler, you heard Jeff say it, way down on that list at four over among some of the other big names. Rory, Fleetwood, Patrick Reed is plus three. Colin Morikawa, plus three. Xander Schauffele, plus three. Bryson DeChambeau in that same area as well. We'll keep checking the leaderboard every hour of the U.S. Open at Oakmont. If you're listening and wondering why can't I watch this on TV, the coverage is on Peacock until 1, and then I believe it does switch over to USA like it was yesterday. Coming up, Dom and I are going to have some Friday the 13th fun. Our top five favorite horror movies up next. A little edition of our power rankings comes your way. 412-928-9370. If you want to join the conversation, you can also hit us up on the fan text line, which is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. We get into Buccos at noon right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Fan Twitter, that's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Donnie Chedrick with you on 93.7 The Fan until 2. Dom DiTommaso with me behind the glass. Austin Bechtold has very wisely used one of his banked holiday days to go to Oakmont. He will check in for a Bechtold breakdown around 12:30. Pony and Muller will be live from Oakmont Bakery again today. Stop by and say hello to them from 2 to 6. Something that I don't know how it isn't sponsored yet is our YouTube chat on the live YouTube feed, which you can check out the show there too as well. This comes in from Ray. Remember what I brought up earlier, Dom? I said the guy that played Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds. Ray, Donnie kind of looks like Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds. I do. I've heard that one a time or two. The three that I've gotten a lot are Donald Gibb, which is the guy who plays Ogre, Braun Strowman. In the face, it is there. I've actually seen it enough now to think like, yeah, I mean, I wish I looked like the dude. He's like 6'8", and he's like an absolute brick you-know-what house. I get Braun Breaker a lot, too, now, with the buzz cut.
See, Braun Strowman I always thought was your best lookalike. I think Braun Breaker might take the cake right now, and it's the buzzed head.
I mean, I'll very happily take that. I think it's a couple of... That's three handsome men right there, Dom, if I had to say so myself. 50-minute mark on The Fan. That's brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. You hear that music. Normally you hear it on Thursdays around 3:30 for the PM team. We did not have it yesterday because we had check-ins with Jeff Hathorne, who will hop back on with us just before 12:30. That is the power rankings music, because we will be doing some power rankings here on this show. It is Friday the 13th. To my knowledge, the only Friday the 13th of the entire calendar year. So we got to take advantage of it, Dom. It's not like we have another opportunity to do so. So with that being said, the power ranking today from 5 to 1 will be our favorite horror movies. Now, here's the thing. I do want to clarify this, because you may be at home thinking to yourself, or you may pull up a list of best horror movies. We decided that the movie Jaws is not a horror movie. Sometimes you will see that on a list. You will pull up, I don't know, Rotten Tomatoes or like Variety, whatever the website may be, and it will have Jaws on there. I never viewed it as a horror movie. I viewed it more as a thriller. All the suspense built up. And I love the movie. Dom loves the movie. I think it's one of the great pieces of cinema ever made, for my money. I don't think either one of us will have it on this list, because we're talking your vintage, like what you picture a horror movie to be. So we do not have Jaws on there. Just wanted to get that one out of the way, because you know you'd get people like, how do you not have Jaws? Phenomenal movie. Absolutely love the movie. It's not going to be on the list. Dom, I will let you go with your number five first.
This is very exciting. And I consider myself a horror movie connoisseur.
And I know you had a just riveting discussion with Jason Mackey the other night about movies, so I'm excited to hear your top five list here. Although you've told me a couple, and it does give me hope.
Listen,
it gives me a lot of hope here.
I think it's going to be a good list. I think there's not going to be a lot of people up in arms. Number five, this is one that's not that well known, or maybe people just don't like it that much. I don't know. Number five is Urban Legend. Came out in 1999. And maybe it's because I'm a college kid, so I can relate to it, but it's about a serial killer on a college campus that kills people based off of urban legends. And I think it's great, great atmosphere, great setting, acting is good, twist, plot twist at the end. Urban Legend, number five.
Okay, I haven't heard of that one, but it sounds at least like something I'd be interested in watching.
You've never heard of Urban Legend?
No, I haven't.
Really?
I'm not gonna knock it. I just haven't heard of it. But it did make me think. I don't know why. You would enjoy the show Dexter if you haven't seen it already. Now I'll say this, which may hurt. I do think it was a show that worked up to a peak at season four, and it came crashing down by the end. Once you got all the way through it, I think it went a little bit long. I know that there are people out there who enjoy the spinoffs of Dexter, but the early, like, 4 to 5 seasons of Dexter, very good. And
I'm
intrigued. You'd enjoy it. My number five is the original Dawn of the Dead from 1978. Now, I admit going in, anytime I bring this movie up, there are two key reasons why I go with this. One, it is very local. It was mostly filmed at Monroeville Mall. You could probably film another zombie movie there now, the way that Monroeville Mall looks. And listen, I hope that nothing ever happens to Monroeville Mall because of the history of this movie. And they have the George A. Romero, like, plaque and, you know, like, little statue in there, too. Another tie-in, my mom, she was 18 years old. She worked at the JCPenney at Monroeville Mall while they filmed this movie. So that was always something, like, every time I watch it, if I'm watching it with somebody new, I bring it up. It probably annoys the hell out of them. But I always thought it was cool. Now, yeah, my mom's not making a cameo or anything in the movie, but she worked at the Monroeville Mall, JCPenney, when they filmed Dawn of the Dead. And I think it is... I think it's the best zombie movie ever made. It's not the first one. Night of the Living Dead came first 10 years earlier. But Dawn of the Dead, for me, it just always hits. Like, I'll watch it every year, and maybe some of the stuff you watch and think, like, oh, man, like, I can tell this movie is almost 50 years old. It just always hits for me. It doesn't have the zombies that sprint. That didn't come around until, like, the turn of the century. But... I don't know what it is. It's just always a hitter for me. And I think I've always been a fan of the ending. I watched this movie from a time where I was way, way, way too young because John didn't give a crap about me watching rated R movies or, you know, playing Grand Theft Auto, whatever. So big, big fan of Dawn of the Dead. I had to have it on the list, even if it's not like that scary of a horror movie. Number four, Dom.
All right, number four. Now, this is, I think, when people could get, you know, a little bit upset at the list, and I defer to you on whether you think this is a horror movie or not. Number four, Donnie, I'm going to go with Jurassic Park here. I have Jurassic Park at number four. Now, I know we're not including Jaws, and I agree with that. Jaws is not horror. I think Jurassic Park can count as a horror movie. And I love Jurassic Park, so it's on my list. It's at number four.
I'm currently responding to somebody who asked me if people think Ray Fittipaldi sounds like Mark Cabali. I don't mind that, Dom. I mean, I wouldn't go there. Like, when I think of Jurassic Park, I'm not thinking horror movie.
You have to think outside the box on this one. I know it sounds scary at first to consider it a horror movie, But, you know, it kind of is.
Somebody said this on the text line, which I don't have this on my list. Have you ever seen any of the Terrifier movies with Art the Clown?
Bits and pieces, but it's too gory for me.
So, see, like, I don't really mind that stuff. They are wild. I've seen the first two. Absolutely wild movies. And yes, to another texture, I do know that Night of the Living Dead is also local. I think that was filmed, in Washington County? Like, I don't think it's all that far from where Pony actually lives right now. I just happen to like Dawn of the Dead more than Night of the Living Dead or any of the others, for that matter. Number four for me, I went with Insidious. I was between that and The Conjuring, and I was trying to workshop a couple of others. The Conjuring, yeah, it's based on a true story. I think that is a cool tie-in. Insidious really isn't, or like, I don't think it is, unless I'm missing something. I think scare for scare, though, Insidious takes it for me. A lot of jump scares, maybe you could call that cheap, but I go Insidious at number four. Number three, Dom.
Number three, I have the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which was tough for me, Donnie, because this is a movie that I don't really consider it horror, but I know everybody else does, and I love the movie. It was filmed on like a $5 budget, and it feels real. Like, it feels like you can go into the middle of Texas and find this guy, but I don't really consider it horror, but of course it's going to be included in the list because everybody else does.
You're not going to believe this, Dom. Number three, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Let's go.
We're right on it, buddy. The mid-70s felt a little bit scarier back then, too. They've made several remakes.
Like, too many remakes.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a lot of remakes based on horror movies. You can turn a lot of them into tentpole films, and you just get a million of them. It's easy to do that. We've seen it with really any of the big horror movies that are out there. But the very first one is great. Number two.
Number two, I'm glad you said Insidious because it almost cracked the top five. But at number two, I'm going with the other one you mentioned, The Conjuring. Because that movie genuinely scared me. The acting was superb. The house was just so creepy. And it's based on a true story. I've watched it so many times now. It's pretty much a comfort movie for me. I love The Conjuring.
So I went with something similar. I didn't go with The Conjuring. I went with what pretty much started that genre years ago. I went with The Exorcist at number two. Linda Blair, I believe the story with that is that the actual set for that movie was haunted.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Like creepy stuff happened when they were filming it.
Yeah. I watched that movie when I was 6 years old for the first time, Dom. If that gives you any indication of what my father is like.
Are you serious?
I watched it when I was 6 years old and I was terrified. I was terrified. The first time I watched The Exorcist. And I think that's one of those movies that stands the test of time. I mean, there are movies from that era that are just great horror films. We said the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You have The Omen from way back when. The Shining, which, like, I didn't put either of those two on my list, but I will acknowledge, like, those are great horror movies. The Shining very well probably could have been in the top five here.
The Shining's too long for me. I mean, it takes them an hour to even get to the hotel. It's way too long of a movie. Way too long.
Well, you got to blame Stephen King for that, a guy who is known to have diarrhea of the typewriter back in his day when he was writing those babies up. That guy could write a whole chapter on somebody, like, taking a drink of water. The Exorcist for me, though, very firmly in the number two spot. Number one, Dom, I feel like we may be going the same route.
Yeah, we are. I mean, do you want to... I know we have the same one. Would you like to say it or should I say it?
The original Halloween.
Yeah. Not only Donnie is it my favorite horror movie, there's a real argument it is my favorite movie, period.
And it's so, like, simplistic, too. Like, they didn't have to do anything crazy. They had to make it on a pretty tight budget. I mean, the history of the Michael Myers mask is that it was the face of William Shatner from Star Trek. It was just a Captain Kirk mask that they had to spray paint white. That was all they did with it. A really unknown Jamie Lee Curtis. Donald Pleasance, just the role of a lifetime as Dr. Loomis. You also get, like, conspiracy theories that try to tie Halloween and Psycho together, because Sam Loomis is also a character in Psycho, and that is the name of Donald Pleasance in that movie. I mean, and yeah, it spawned just a whole genre of horror movie. It spawned like 15 movies under the Halloween umbrella. Some of the newer ones are okay. I saw like the trilogy that started up, what, in like 2018 or 2019. I honestly wasn't huge on the Rob Zombie Halloween movies. You know, and sometimes the sequels are hit or miss. I think Halloween 4 is probably one of my favorite sequels, but you have the ones that kind of fall flat. Paul Rudd, by the way, in Halloween 6, he plays Tommy Doyle. I don't know if you were aware of that.
I thought H20 was very good. I thought the newer trilogy was very good. And Jamie Lee Curtis has come out and said, kind of hinting at she would be open to returning for another role in a new Halloween movie.
Telling you, man. I mean, and people will go see them. And you know who people are? Me. I will go see them if they made another one.
I'll be there.
I'll keep on rolling to go see. Very funny text that came in. You guys forgot one. Steelers versus Jags 2017 divisional playoff game. That's a good text. I don't know who that is, but that is a great text. A lot of good movies thrown on this list on the text line. I mean, we got shouts for Night of the Living Dead, which was filmed in Evans City. There were some calls for Candyman. Candyman, the OG Candyman is good. Tony Todd.
I mean, love Tony Todd.
Yeah, but the late, great Tony Todd. Doran was a huge Tony Todd guy. I actually, this is probably 2019, Doran did an afternoon show on a Saturday, and I was just running the board on run-of-the-mill day 6 years ago, 5+ years ago now. Doran had Tony Todd on as a guest. That was pretty cool, because Tony Todd was the Candyman. He was in the remake of Night of the Living Dead, which was also made locally. I think that was more like Zillion Opal, maybe. I might be off. I might be off on where the zombie locations are, because there's just so many that were made around here. But that was a good little power ranking, Dom.
Has anybody said Final Destination on the text line? Because that was one I've gone back and forth on.
I do enjoy those movies, but it's almost, it's like you know what's going to happen.
Yes. The
deaths in those movies are very creative. That's what keeps me coming back.
And I think that's what makes it so genius, because, you know, I've said this before. Odds are a clown's not going to climb out of a sewer and drag you down with them. You could die on a roller coaster. Like, it's possible. A plane could crash. So I think those movies are genius.
Blair Witch Project, that got a shout from people. The original Scream. I do enjoy the first Scream, but I'm not going to put it in my top five, but I do like Scream. Chucky, that's another one I watched when I was like 6 years old.
I find Chucky funny, not scary.
Do you know the fun fact about Chucky's name? Like where the name Charles Lee Ray came from?
No, do tell.
So the man that possessed the doll, Charles Lee Ray, they took a combination of notable killers. So Charles was for Charles Manson. Lee was for Lee Harvey Oswald. Ray was for James Earl Ray, who killed MLK.
I didn't know that at all.
How about that?
Wow.
How about that little piece of trivia?
See, now
there?
That makes it actually more scary, to be to be honest.
All right, that was a fun little discussion. And again, talking movies, you do get your occasional like, hey, don't talk about this. It's a sports station. But there are people flooding the text line in the YouTube chat talking about movies. Listen, it's a feel-good Friday in the summer. We're going to get back to sports. We got a Paul Skeens Day that starts in about 2 hours. We'll talk about that coming up next. Jeff Hathorn joins us just before 12:30. And a Bechtold breakdown. Our buddy Austin is also out at Oakmont. He'll join us after 12:30. Bob Walk at 1, Josh Roundtree at 1:30. All of that ahead on 93.7 The Fan. But first, fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Cloudier today and a little bit cooler, a high of 82.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.